Welcome. I'm Stuart Gandalf. I'm CEO of Healthcare Success. And I've already had somebody raising their hand. I'll take a look at that, or somebody can look for me. I'm CEO of Healthcare Success. Today, we're going to talk about how to build an exceptional healthcare brand. I'm going to do some housekeeping in just a moment and talk about what to expect today. We are a national integrated agency. We do nothing but work in healthcare. We are truly integrating, meaning that today's topic is about branding. It's one of our favorite areas of expertise. We are also certainly known as a digital marketing agency, and well as on the strategy side. So we work nationally. And that actually today's attendance reflects this a little bit. We have on the call today quite a wide range of folks. People that are on this call today can be from, I looked through the attendee list earlier, and when people are still joining, it looks like as well. We have people from a device manufacturing, pharma, SaaS, health systems, and a lot of some private equity people, as well as multi-location providers. So a broad mix, and this pretty much matches the people we work with. That's relevant because this is a pretty challenging crowd because you have so many different levels of experience with branding. So we're going to talk at the high level, at the mid-level, and the entry level throughout this, and hopefully we'll find good content for everybody. Also, the folks in the call include, money people, executives, CEOs, and marketers. So at any rate, we're excited to work with you on this call today. And I brought along today one of the members of our branding team. Brett is an amazing brander, and he's going to be talking about the design side. Brett, do you want to say anything about your background just quickly as we jump in?
Yeah, really quickly. I've been doing branding for about the last 20 years. I started in New York doing pure pharmaceutical branding for the most part. And since then, I've come out west where I've worked on multiple marketing teams, including Invisalign, but that's what people know it as, but Align Tech, as well as a lot of other internal teams and agency sides. So I like to think that I have the best of both worlds when I approach branding, but it's always tricky. So that's what I got.
And I should mention too, our firm has about 40 specialists all in their areas of expertise. Brett is one of the people on our design and branding team. We have multiple teams doing different things, and maybe someday we'll get to meet the rest of them. So today we're going to talk about really what is a brand, why does it matter? We're going to talk about the brand development process and how it works. We're going to share some examples with you as well, and we will have a Q&A. So, by the way, also at the Q&A, if you have questions, feel free to add them to the chat. And you can also add in there, for example, why you attended today would be a fun sort of icebreaker for us. Since we're leading, I won't be reading the chat very much while I'm speaking, but once we get to the Q&A section, we'll respond. So feel free to ask questions or make comments there. And let's get going. So the first question is, what is a brand? And this is an amazing question because even among marketers, people that you would think would be more familiar with the ins and outs of a brand. Not everybody's really clear on what a brand actually is. So I'm going to try to make this a little easier for everybody. If you look at the definitions of branding, it's one of those, there's some art and science here. So there's sort of a Rorschach test. Different people have different viewpoints what a brand is. So I'm going to start with some quotes. So your brand is a story unfolding across all customer touch points. Those are really strong words chosen carefully, story and all customer touch points. The brand is a living entity and it's enriched and are undermined cumulatively over time, the product of 1,000 small gestures. You may recognize Michael Eisner of Disney fame and a whole bunch of other things that Michael Eisner's done. Your brand is the sum total of all experiences your customers have with you. This is a definition I've been using for a while. I'm not sure if I made this one up or heard this somewhere, but this is a really good idea. So it's important to recognize that a brand is much bigger than just the marketing. The brand is the entire experience that the patient or consumer healthcare professional has with you. I often talk about when I'm speaking live about some of my experiences in the past. I've walked into a hospital when there's a dead rat on the entryway on their grand opening. Nobody cleaned it up for a couple of hours. I've seen, bloody bandages in the parking lot. All these things are part of a brand. So it's the way you answer the phone, the way patients are taken care of, or how the device actually performs. All of these things are touch points. And of course, the marketing part is great because at least you have control, better control over that. So the so again, then thinking this through, it's the product or service you deliver, what you stand for, what you know, how do you communicate, what does it look like? So it's much larger than most people realize. And we talk about creating a strong brand, delivering a positive, consistent emotional experience. And you know, the point of this slide really is that consumers will form their own opinions, thank you very much, but you can do a lot to influence them in a positive way on both an intellectual level and an emotional level about your business. Now, if you walk away with nothing else today, a brand is not a logo. A brand is not a logo. A logo is an expression of the brand. The name and the logo are part of the identity called the brand identity. And Brent will be speaking about this. And I've even heard marketing people that are professionals refer to the brand as the logo. It is not. The brand is much, much larger. The identity is a piece of that that should be strategic, well thought through, and well-crafted both from an art point of view, as a design point of view, as well as a word or copy point of view. So when we talk today about the brand process and how to create a brand, which is really what today is about, is that the best brands really are a collaboration with strategy, with messaging, design, all working together to create a platform that can be, that is meaningful today, tomorrow, and really indefinitely. And so that's what this is all about, of how do we actually pull all these pieces together? And we're going to be using some examples and talking about branding. And I recognize that on the call today, we probably have people that are, you know, some of there may be a venture capital startup on this where they don't have any brand at all. Most of you probably already have a name and a logo, but what do we do next? How do we interpret that brand? How do we grow that brand? All these things are valid questions. And one thing to think through is that there's a continuum here in branding. So there you can enter at different stages and with different levels of detail. So one of the questions was you go home and convince your colleagues that you need to invest in a brand. Well, why do you need a brand, right? That's a valid question. Like, why do I even care about this, Stuart? I'm a PE guy or I'm a CEO and that's just marketing hooey. Well, I mean, you made it to the webinar, so you must care a little, right? If you're listening to this. But the let's talk about some value of brands. So the number one, branding does give your business a competitive edge by differentiating itself. So it's a standing for something compared to the sea of competitors that are out there. By building an effective brand means that you are, by this definition, differentiated. And the stronger your brand is, the more differentiated you will be. Interestingly, people refer to and they share in this world of social media brands they're passionate about. So, you know, not every brand has that passion. Literally today, I was on a call. We just had two really nice new engagements that we're working on with people that were referred to us, both by the same person. They're passionate about our business. And interestingly, the person that referred them, we haven't met. So they're familiar with our work by reputation. That's when it's fantastic, right? We build a brand very carefully over the years, and people are sharing and passionate about our brand. Some of them are our customers, but some are people that don't even know us, and that's awesome. Branding allows you to actively shape your reputation. So in especially if you're in the provider world, of the practice world, or you know, addiction treatment or hospitals, there's a lot of variables and touch points that patient has. So a lot of that's very hard to control at the executive level, right? Depending on the day of the patients, the day, what is the staff interaction with, or the doctor interaction with, or the diagnosis and all of that. But branding does allow you to actively shape that reputation proactively. Not everything is in your control, but if you're a control freak like me, chances are you want the things that can be in your control to go well. Consumers and doctors and other HCPs trust reputable brands. That's just a fact. People are much more likely to choose a reputable brand, trust a reputable brand, and that happens through a lot of work and a lot of investments. As you may know, people pay more for, you know, Tumi luggage than regular luggage. People pay more for Mercedes than other kinds of cars. People pay more for established, well-respected brands. And again, just a fact. Branding is a way of taking you from the generic sort of me-too-ism cesspool to being able to be something special. And branded businesses are a whole lot more valuable. So this chart over here on the left, I haven't referred to yet, is actually from Kantar Media. They do the brand value summary every year. These are the 10 leading brands in the world. And so if you can see here, Apple with 880 billion brand. So what I did was I went and checked the market cap just to see what's the market cap. And it turns out that the brand value of Apple is essentially a third of its market cap. That's amazing. Now, I think Apple's a great discussion point here because Apple has fantastic marketing. But marketing, and for those of you that may remember Marketing 101, is just one, it includes the price, product, place, and promotion. Classically, those are the four. So the product is fantastic, right? And so it's much bigger than just even the marketing. It's the entire experience of Apple, the Apple Store, the phones, the computers, all of it, that Apple world that they've created, that Apple universe, which is why they're, you know, the, if not the most valuable company in the world, I think they are, they're very close, they're not. By the way, I checked Google, and it also was roughly around third in terms of market cap. So brand has massive value, which means that it is, and this is something from Steve Forbes, that your brand is the single most important investment you can make in business. So when people ask me how much a brand is going to cost, it depends, right? It depends on the complexity, the number of steps we need to take. But it is a serious investment. It's the kind of thing that, you know, when we have clients with more modest budgets, we try to, you know, work around it and find ways of making it work. When we have clients that say, no, this is really important, I want to do this right, we can do that too. But it is an investment, but it is the most important investment. And, you know, by the end of this, if you're all inspired and you think you want to do this and you want to find out more, talk to us and we'll, you know, kind of give you a sense of what it might look like for your particular situation. But it is a valuable investment. So let's talk about the process. So one of the things that different agencies use different processes, this is ours, and it's a good one to work with as a baseline. And the basic steps are going to be the same, however we define it. So the first step in the breadth, and we're going to talk about this in more detail in just a moment. This is a roadmap of where we're going for a large part of this meeting. So the discovery phase is, you know, really, obviously, it's really hard to create a brand for a company you don't understand. So the discovery phase is really, really important. The strategy phase is the part where all the heavy thinking goes into work before we start getting the creative process underway. Invention is something special, and we'll talk about that in a moment. The brand structure or hierarchy is another key issue. How do your brands fit together? And then messaging, the words, and the visual identity. How do these all fit together? So we're going to drill down into each of these things and talk through about how to create a successful brand. So the development, the discovery process is really, really important. And this is where we invest a lot of time. And so again, I'm going to use the way we do this just as a way, because, you know, I can't speak to how other people are doing it. So this is how some of the things that we think through. So first of all, are we going to do research? And most, I would say, even when we're working with some pretty large brands, a lot of times they don't want it, they want to skip the research phase, which is fine. If they feel like they've already done it, they really know their customer. But it is something worth pausing and saying, are we going to do qualitative research? Of course, would be things like focus groups. Quantitative research would be surveys where you're actually able to calculate and tabulate the results in a numeric fashion. So qualitative and quantitative research can be really helpful in varieties of places. So for example, with a medical device, we did a small once a company doing this kind of work, a relatively very focused, smaller research study on HCPs on would they use this device. With other companies, when they're trying to create a brand, they want to understand the consumer point of view. Sometimes it's very heavy quantitative and qualitative research. Sometimes people will use research along the way, not just in the opening discovery phase, but as a reality check for, you know, are we going the right direction? Or is our brand, you know, are there any unintended consequences with our new name? Or is our creative approach working? So research can work well. Again, it's not necessary. And again, that's where some of the variability of pricing comes, is depending on the complexity that's required. But that is something you should at least consider. The competitive analysis we're going to talk about in a little while. The existing client research, And so again, like you may have to be doing new research, but a lot of times, especially with corporate clients, they already have data. They've already have surveys. They already have feedback from salespeople. They have sales sheets. They've done a lot of homework. So when you're working with an agency, which by the way, if you are going to do this process, it's generally better to work with, you know, people that are experienced at this, then you really want to make sure they are fully informed. And people ask me, well, what do you guys want to see? And it's like, if you're in doubt, show it to us. I'd rather have way too much than way too little. So anything that you think would be of value about client points of view, influencer points of view, HCP points of view are important. We consider also your internal and external audiences, very important. Many times we do stakeholder interviews. So for example, we may talk to their, if they're a provider, their, you know, a multi-location business, we may talk to some of their opinion leading doctors, not all of them, not all 100 or 200 or 500 or whatever, but some ones that the, usually the client knows who the thought leaders are and who needs to be involved, maybe from a political as well as a knowledge base. But, or it might be referring doctors, it might be patients, it would be ground level staff, the executive suite, could be people outside the industry that know of you. All of these things are important. And we do want to discover this and synthesize all this so we have the knowledge base to make proper decisions. So the strategy level, we talk a lot about in the branding world, coming up with a purpose, mission, vision, and values. And so usually we're handling this at the strategy phase, developing that. Again, if our client already has that, they're comfortable with that, that's great. We're gonna talk about purpose, mission, vision, values in a little while as well. Sometimes they have something, they wanna double check it, see if it's real. Sometimes they're asking what it is. So those are all things that are worth discussing. The context of the audience, in other words, how does your business fit within their larger world matters? You know, what are your current capabilities? Do you have equity in your name? What's happening in your category vis-a-vis competitors? So we start in the strategy process, we're looking for opportunities to think through the rational arguments as well as the emotional arguments that we're going to make for you. So this is the strategy phase. This is preceding the creative phase. We're not there yet. We're investing the time to do the groundwork. Sometimes we do workshops. And again, workshops, if you know a branding project, you know a branding project. Sometimes the workshops are usually not at the very beginning of the process, because we want to do that discovery, so we have an informed workshop. But a lot of times we'll do a workshop with key stakeholders to bring out the best thinking of the team. So we do our preparation, we lead a workshop, sometimes at the, you know, relatively the beginning of the phase after discovery, sometimes a little bit later. But that can be a good way to get the best thinking out of everybody. And again, that just depends on the project. So during this phase, most of you are familiar with SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It is something that we do a lot of times during this process. By the way, the slides and the recording will be available after the meeting. So you'll be able to, if you want to read this, you can after from the slides. But this is a classic. This happens to be coming from SEMrush. But the strength at the top half of this would be, typically we look at strengths and weaknesses are things that you can control. They're internal to the company. And then external things would be opportunities and threats, things that you really can't control. So classically, strengths and weaknesses would be about your operations, why you, you know, your providers or your technology or whatever. Opportunities might be openings in the marketplace. Threats could be, you know, competitors or new regulation. Keep in mind that the chart on the left is really more of a generic driver. Some of the things that come up always when we're doing this are things like legal compliance and HIPAA. If you're in the health system world right now, you know HIPAA is a big deal with Facebook and Google. There's an unforeseen threat that came real this year. Reimbursement, healthcare consumerism, consolidation, HCP referral patterns, recruiting is a big deal, safety. You know, a couple of years ago, we had one of our nursing home chains had some COVID deaths, as many others did. So it's really important to do the groundwork thinking about your SWOT analysis, but also vis-a-vis competitors. Speaking of which, highly important to review the positioning and branding of your top 5 to 10 competitors to understand what their messaging says. What does their visual identity look like? Keep in mind that your identity, your branding must break through the clutter to minimize the customer confusion. And one of the things we see is people really oftentimes skip this stage. And that's really dangerous because it's so easy to end up in a sea of sameness where you look and sound and feel like everybody else. In fact, one of our potential clients is on the webinar today, asked us about this a couple of days ago. Well, how do we avoid looking like everybody else? In their particular space, everybody is copying each other. It's all corporate PE owned. And so his question was, how do we avoid that? And the answer to that is all this process stuff we talked about, and especially reviewing what everybody else is saying, finding the essence of why you, and then making sure that you're not falling in the same lane as everybody else. Target audiences are also vital, especially in healthcare. One of the things I talk about a lot is you have multiple audiences. So you have the healthcare consumers, which may be the patient or their family, or maybe just a consumer, right? If you're, we have consumer packages or B2B, it could be, you know, executives at a B2B company, but whoever the consumers are, you may have families involved. You may have the HCPs involved, you know, MDs, PAs, MPs. Employees these days are often a big stakeholder, or especially if you're recruiting or trying to keep them. And Google is always in the back of our mind, not so much at the branding phase, but when we get to that Google execution phase, we need to really think about how this is going to not only get your messaging out, but be something that Google cares enough to cover. So a lot of times we talk about breaking your all these audiences out into personas. And if you're not familiar with persona, personas are essentially archetypes that we will create, and this happened to be for a B2B client, to really humanize them. To look, in this case, we're talking about she's female, job description, industry background, type of college she may have gone to. You know, in this case, it was about telehealth. So we really want to think through, like, what is this persona? Typically, we'll have four or five personas that we'll be looking at. Again, it just depends on the situation, but it's really helpful to humanize those, especially in the creative crisis, because writers and artists, it's really hard to create for a crowd. It's a lot easier to create for individuals. Next slide. The positioning. So the positioning is the rational appeal that answers why you. So I often say, if you said to, when I speak live to an audience, face-to-face, you know, I used to always say, like, what is the one thing you want people to remember about you if they can only remember one thing? And a lot of times I'd see some nervous shifting in the seat, but really that's what the essence of positioning. It's the rational appeal that answers why you. Now, the positioning then needs to be true, right? You don't want to say you're the most advanced technology if you're not. It needs to be memorable. It needs to be differentiating. It needs to be compelling. And ideally, it needs to be defendable. And you can be, for example, true, memorable, differentiating, but not compelling. For example, you know, I'm the only left-hand surgeon in town. Like, well, okay, it's all true, but is that compelling? So the positioning is really an important part. Now, I want to make a really important point here. Branding is so much about emotional connection, not rational. So we need both sides of the brain here, left and right. But the point that I want to make here is that we often look at as positioning as the starting point. It's the skeleton that we will begin building the larger emotional story. And typically the positioning, you know, for example, one of the examples I used for years is, you know, if the positioning for a dental DSO was being gentle, we wouldn't use that as our tagline necessarily. Typically, it might be translated into whisper soft dentistry or something else. So you want to think of the positioning as the, again, the skeleton, the starting point. During the invention process is all about when we have a chance to invent the category. So for example, Tesla is one of my favorites. Tesla did not just reinvent electric cars, it reinvented cars. And it made electric cars viable because the genius that, whether you love them or hate them, Elon Musk had was, it's all about the charging network. What makes Tesla unique and stands out from the crowd, and being a Tesla owner myself, it's that charging network. The fact that the range anxiety just goes away if you drive a Tesla. I've been driven 600-mile trips. Range anxiety is not an issue I worry about at all. And so when you have that opportunity to redevelop a category, That requires some extra thought, extra analysis, but it's certainly an exciting time. This is an example of a client that we worked with that is reinventing healthcare. They're in rural Michigan and elsewhere, and I can't go into any details of this, but they're actually doing integrating healthcare on a mobile basis for rural underserved populations in conjunction with partnerships and so forth. So you can look them up if you want more, but this was a program we created. Again, it's a disruptor and testing in those early phases. In this particular case, it was a great client they had. They already had done some brand work. We took their brand guidelines, interpreted them, and created a marketing messaging and just helped take them to the next level on this. Again, this was some work that we did last year. It was all about bringing healthcare on through social, through different tactics as well. The brand development process also includes the brand architecture. Brett's going to speak about that in just a moment, so I will defer to him on that. The brand messaging, I'm going to wrap up my piece here, so Brett's getting ready for his part. So the brand messaging then takes all of this into account, and the deliverables can vary depending on the project. Sometimes we're creating a brand name, which is a whole separate topic. Someday in the future here, we'll do a whole webinar just on brand naming, because that's a really crucial process. Doesn't happen on every branding project, but it does on some, and it's always fun when we do. The tagline is essentially a sentence that describes what the business does. It comes from the idea of tagging along with the logo. We think about the value proposition or an elevator pitch, but here, down here at the messaging pillars, oftentimes we create what's called messaging pillar or themes that the creative team will use forevermore to describe the company, to sell its services, to make sure that we're on the same page. And we will also take that and often create brand messaging guidelines, much like Brad and his team will create brand identity guidelines. And so again, these are all parts of the process that we can do. And I just want to share my last piece here is that when we think about your purpose, vision, mission, values, this is real. You know, this, for example, you can read this on this either right now as I'm speaking or on the slides later. But, you know, the purpose for Special Olympics, what is the vision for the Alzheimer's Association, the mission, raw yoga or values, Mayo Clinic's values are respect, integrity, compassion, healing, teamwork, innovation, excellence, stewardship. Whereas, you know, the vision of the Alzheimer's Association is a world without Alzheimer's. Special Olympics to transform communities by inspiring people to open their minds, accept and include people with intellectual disabilities and anyone who is perceived as different. So these are very powerful steps that make the copy and the art sing layer. Brett, you're on.
Yes, thank you. So I'm going to talk about the visual design, the visual systems, if you will. I'll definitely, to Stuart's point, brand is a very large thing. Identity are the elements of that thing. So I'm going to zoom through some of the elements and then talk about how you really make a cohesive brand that speaks to your audience as intended. Let's go to the next slide, Stuart, please. So the visual identity, to Stuart's point, is not the brand. The visual identity are those smaller things that make up the brand. And can you have an identity without the brand? Can you have an identity without all the things Stuart just discussed? Absolutely. You can get a logo, you can pick fonts, you can pick color palettes. Those things happen. A lot of times our customers, our clients come to us with those things already set. What we're talking about today is that bigger thing, right? That larger thing, that experience across all your touch points, your brand. So again, just to reiterate, identity are elements that make up your brand. Let's go to the next slide. And I think this is a really important point to make. Informed brand design. Stuart just told you all of the things we do before we ever design anything, right? We have strategists, we have content writers helping us, the creative team, to understand who we're speaking to and what we're designing to. It's very important. There's a lot of designers who will say, this is your logo, it's awesome, just use it. That's cool if it works for you. But when you want informed design, you're taking into consideration your stakeholders' wants and desires. What did that positioning show you? What is the messaging trying to communicate to their users? So, you know, a logo more often than not, can be designed in a vacuum. An intelligent brand system cannot be. It needs to be informed by something. It needs to be informed by the perception of you. How are we trying to change that perception of you? How do you communicate? What is your tone? You know, are you a fun brand? Are you a serious brand? It really depends on what our clients are looking for and what our findings tell us it needs to be. Let's go to the next slide, Stuart. Elements of brand design. I'm sorry, brand identity. Again, we're talking about identity here. So logo, brand architecture. We'll talk about both of these, all of these actually. Color palettes, typography. Typography is a tricky one, but it's as important as color and logo. How do you treat your imagery? Is it illustration? Is it photography? Is it manipulated photography? Of course, once you cover those things, then you start to have to battle with how does that translate into a brand? How do all these things come together to make a proper visual system? Kind of the interim step between the identity elements and realizing a visual system, which we will definitely talk about, are your guidelines, right? I don't want to say they're your Bible, but they're definitely your rule book to maintain brand consistency and make sure that you're delivering on the vision for the brand and the messaging that you've worked so hard to establish with your clients, ideally. Next slide. So logo, super basic, right? I always like to think of logo as your graphic elevator pitch, right? Yes, your logo can be very expressive. It can definitely let people know what you do, maybe even how you do it. But at the end of the day, it's a proprietary mark that you own and you protect and becomes very recognizable wherever you're applying it to. It's essential, yes. It's informed by messaging, yes. But it doesn't really get its legs as part of a brand system until you start to understand how to use it, when to use it, and how that extends into your communications across platforms, across applications, print, digital. We all know what they are now. It's changing constantly, so it's a challenge. And we'll talk about that a bit later. Of course, there are various approaches to logos. Some people like have a very simple logo type, so you don't have a symbol. Other people do have a symbol. Neither one is right or wrong. I think, you know, it really comes down to how you implement it and how you communicate it through your visual system. Next. Iterative design process. This really is, I think, where good designers and good agencies really separate themselves from, hey, I got a logo made, it's cool, it looks great. Iterative design process is really about working hand in hand with your client, right? Your client knows what they want or thinks they know what they want, but you can't just say what you want because it's a design that's perfect. It's really important to work with your clients to make sure that not just the designer who has something in mind is very happy with the product, but to make sure that it answers all those questions that messaging put out there. The client needs to be as happy and confident as their mark as you are. And this is a design process. It's not logo specific. So this applies to everything from workshops when you initially start the discovery phase and the strategy phase with your messaging and content team to working with the designers to make sure we understand what you are looking for and what you think suits your needs while we advise on the best ways to accommodate that. So a big part of our job is not just designing something. It's designing something, then going to our clients and working with them to understand if it's hitting the mark for them while it also addresses those needs that were set out by your earlier discovery phase, if you will, with messaging and strategy. It's really important, and I think that's what sets great designs apart, is that it's not designed for design's sake. It's informed design that has been worked on as in a partnership with your clients. Let's go to the next, Stuart. This is just a great example. PlasmaSource is a recent client of ours, a very cool client. They're in the blood plasma donation industry vertical, if you will. But this is a great example. Our design team, which I think is great, we touch base with our strategy. We get the messaging, we get the findings that they came up with. We definitely have our own workshop with the clients to understand what they like, what works, you know, blood plasma, obviously enough. Maybe you don't want to use red. It's a bit on the nose and a bit scary. So this is just a great example of really an early, early pass at looking at logos, trying to address those questions and those needs that the client have, but we're not dialing in quite yet. We're casting a pretty wide net, and we're trying to make each of these marks speak to what we found in our findings and our learnings, if you will. But you can see that doesn't mean that you're really dialed into something yet. You still have the creative exploration. Here we get into subjectivity, which is very challenging. As you all know, when you get into design by committees, there's a lot of opinions. But that being said, we don't like to put anything forward that is missing the mark. So if you're seeing it, we think it's on the mark and we can be subjective within this space. Ideally, you have a great conversation at this phase. You figure out where to dial in designs and where to start focusing your attention so that we can all be happy with the end result. Next. Again, another example, a really nice dermatology client, cutting edge technology, really, really an industry leader. But at the time, their mark had become stagnant. It was old, it was outdated. It really did not speak to how advanced and current and on trend, trend is probably a bad word, but you know what they were trying to communicate. So again, here you see a wide exploration of, well, let's start here and then we'll narrow it down from there, speaking with our clients, speaking with our strategy team. So again, these are just two really simple visuals of the initial exploration that starts the conversations and starts to help us funnel, narrow down to where we want to end up with a strong mark that works for all of our needs. And once you have a logo, that's great. But in healthcare especially, there's a lot of things to be considered. Maybe you can't, and more than likely, you can't have a logo that works for everything. Of course, larger hospitals have different departments. A lot of practices may have multiple practices in multiple areas, multi-location, obviously. So how do you address that in your brand system? Yeah, you still maintain your logo, but you need to speak to those divisions, those different locations, so the user can understand that when they see something in San Diego, it's related to something in Los Angeles, for instance. So brand architecture becomes really important. We're going to zoom through kind of the big core types of brand architecture here really quick. Next. And you'll recognize a lot of these examples. Again, as I mentioned in chat, we will be sharing out this deck so you can take your time with these, but I'm just going to touch on each of these really quickly. Branded house is the first thing. Think of FedEx. It's the same logo everywhere, but they use a different descriptor and a different color to differentiate their offerings, ground, trade networks, freight in this case. But again, the overarching uniform thing here is that FedEx brand. That doesn't change. The description and the colors change. Over time, you build up your users' familiarity with that. If they use FedEx that often, they start to recognize the differences. They know orange means the umbrella corporation. They know green means ground. So probably the safest approach, I think this is largely where we live a lot of times when we're talking about multi-location practices, very straightforward, very brand specific approach to brand architecture. Next. The endorsed brand gets a little funkier. In this case, we're looking at Kellogg's. And you see their brands change dramatically across their applications. They have a lot of products, but on that box, in that logo lockup, you always have that corporate umbrella brand somewhere letting you know, this is Kellogg's. Kellogg's endorses this brand because it's ours. So you get a lot more variety here. Maybe initially a bit less brand equity, but you're still keeping your name top of mind to those customers. So if they're paying attention, they recognize, yeah, Kellogg's makes this, but you have a very different logo to play with. And each of these sub-brands may have a very different visual system. But at the end of the day, it is anchored in the Kellogg's brand. Sub-brands, we all know Apple, it's a big Apple. you know, they do a great job playing with typography, keeping it uniform, but they let their brands shift a little bit. You know, some use the Apple Watch, Apple TV, those are part of the brand name, but they abbreviate with Apple, where iPad, iPhone, it's more of a standalone brand. We all know it's Apple. They really use their typography in a smart way to make it consistent. But they are all ultimately sub-brands that share a common visual language, mostly typography, but it's a little bit less specific depending on the brand application, the product application, if you will. And then you have the house of brands, which is a whole different animal unto itself. Designers love them because you can always do whatever you want. But largely, if you look at the brands under Newell, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, apologies. There's no indication that these are part of the Newell brand. I'm sure there is in the fine print, but largely each of these brands is a brand unto itself. Very different looks and feels, very different visual systems. And it's less important for this company to be associated with that. In fact, it may be better if it's not. So this is almost a hidden corporate brand, if you will. And you let each brand live on its own and speak to its demographics, its targets, all that jazz as they need to. So it's more of a challenging thing. It's a much bigger animal to deal with when you're talking about design and consistency, but they don't happen often, but it seems like when they do, they become very big things in spite of their corporate brand. And these are just very simple example. Well, not very simple, but these are some of our examples. Going back to what I was talking about initially, you know, we deal with a lot of multi-location practices. We deal with a lot of healthcare, I don't want to say practices, companies that do have different departments. So in this case, we rebranded Astera. I believe we did the naming as well. And we came up with this really beautiful, optimistic corporate mark on the left, Astera Cancer Care. Of course, when you get into practice, you need to delineate your departments. Radiation oncology is the example here. So you need to start thinking about how your logo works when you have those requirements. In this case, we developed a very nice lockup that just let them switch out the descriptor that attached to the core logo. And that's a very simple brand architecture. Here, going back to what I was speaking to before, when you have a multi-location practice, how do you identify that location? In this case, a very simple descriptor. The logo never changes, but your logo lockup needs to change to accommodate that additional information. I'm going to zoom over these really quickly, but they're all important. You could write a book on all of them, color, typography, and imagery. These things really come into play. Of course, you need to be consistent. You know, Apple uses the same typeface everywhere. You know, your colors are heavily dictated by your brand guidelines. Your typo and your imagery treatments are important as well. Are you using photography, illustration, iconography? We'll touch base on these a little bit later when we're talking about visual systems to show you how they apply to your brand system rather than just the individual elements. Again, brand guidelines, and Stuart, I think you can go to the next slide here. Brand guidelines are your Bible, if you will. This is a good example. I mentioned Plasma Source earlier. This is a brand guidelines we just wrapped up, and largely, this is a way to protect your brand. If you're a large company, especially if you have an interior marketing department with designers, lucky you, that's awesome. They're probably pretty familiar with the brand. If you're using vendors and partners or agencies to realize other types of communication, this comes in really handy to make sure that your brand is protected. You have do's and don'ts. You know, you have ways to tell designers or agencies what your brand is able to do and what the should never happen with their brand. Of course, here you're outlining typography use, logo application. What happens when you have an avatar from the logo? More importantly, color palette. You see here, and I'll talk about this a little bit more soon, but we really try to overdo it on color palettes. And that's largely tied to another topic called the living brand I'll speak to towards the end of my little run here. And I'm going to try to speed up. I know we're running out of time. Visual systems, this is what brand is all about in my mind. Everything else is identity. Visual systems is bringing all those elements together, your logo, your imagery, your type, and saying, how do we represent ourselves? Whether it's in paid social, whether it's in print, everything should be uniform. When people interact or experience your brand, it should feel like your brand space. They should recognize that, especially once they get familiar with their brand. So it's these small things that you can do to really tie all of your communications together with a visual system so that people understand when they see you, oh, this is you. Apple does a great job. You can think of their old ads and their new ads. It's always very simple. It's always very clean. It's the same typeface. It's the same hierarchy of typefaces. It's usually the same grid and layout. But this is what branding is all about, how you're communicating to your audiences. Next step. And that first was just setting the prefacing, rather, these things. Synergenics is a testosterone replacement therapy, TRT, client that we've done really great work with, a really great partner. And I just wanted to show you this slide and the next slide in a minute, Stuart, to show you, go back, please, to show you how different a visual system can be applied. The logo never changes in these applications. The color palette is largely the same, but depending on how you treat your typography, how you treat your imagery, and how you develop visual elements, you start to establish a consistent way of communicating to your clients where they start to recognize this is synergenic. So this is a really great example. This is one look at what a visual system could be. And if you go to the next slide, again, using the same brand elements, look how different it could be because of how you're choosing to use those brand elements to communicate. One is bolder, simpler. This one is more direct. The last one is more aspirational, a little bit more dependent on inspirational photography, where this is much more of a graphic approach. Both are playing with the X and synergenics. But again, we're not changing the logo. We're considering how we use and apply the identity into a system across all elements. And this is really what brand is about to me. Everything else is identity, but really delineating how you communicate and how you use those elements in a very consistent way is what visual systems and brand is all about. Another really important thing, especially in healthcare, if you spend all this time developing this beautiful, warm, inviting, comfortable brand, you're making, PlasmaSource was a great example. The approach there was, we don't want to be a cool clinic. We want to feel more like a boutique. We want you to feel like you're walking into your living room or a cafe and you can relax while you're getting our services. Environments mean a lot. Stuart mentioned the rat on a doorstep earlier. I haven't had that severe of an example, but it's really a big disconnect if your online presence and your ads feel young and youthful and warm and inviting, and you walk into a clinic that feels cold and scary. So experiential design and environmental design, especially when you have brick and mortar, mean a lot. It goes from everything from signage to your interior designs to how people navigate your space. If you have a large hospital, how on earth do I get to the emergency room? You got to make that clear. And those are all opportunities to bring your brand into these designs. Let's go to the next tour. This is a good example, Pomona Valley Health. Here you're going to see a lot of things. You're going to see almost full brand systems. On the left, you see a new identity. This is in the desert, in the west. You see that gradient that references that. Below, you see a quick color palette and some avatars. And on the right, you see us starting to think about how we can apply that brand, that identity to your building. Next slide, Stuart. What does that look like inside? How do people find their way around? Again, these are branding opportunities. I think a lot of people in healthcare leave this up to the building or what's there, what's pre-existing, or they put up signs, but you can really do cool design that really makes your environment feel more unique, more special, more on target for what your brand represents. Again, on the left here, you have a nice brand architecture. This was a tricky one. There's some pretty big names here. So we're just working through how we delineate these different centers to the client. Next. and Synergenics. I mentioned that before. I showed you some of the brand work we had been working on for them. Here again, we're thinking, how does that brand apply to your environment? You don't want to come to get testosterone therapy or hormone therapy, which is what they also offer, and walk in and everything is large, burly, bearded men. Now you're in hormones, so, and weight loss. So you're dealing with both men and women at different stages of their life. And how do you start to communicate that when you walk in? In this case, we were for a really poppy look, really emphasizing the new brand work we had done. And again, this feels much more current and on trend than walking into a maybe all beige wall room. Next, Stuart, I'll try to go faster. I know we're out of time. And last but not least, you have to protect and nurture your brand. Once the design is done, once the strategy is done, you can't stop paying attention to it. It's very easy for a brand to get watered down or scattered across communications. Next, please. And that leads right into something that we really ascribe to here, the idea of a living brand. Yes, you should protect your brand. But if we're talking about social networks and stopping someone when they scroll, and maybe your color palette is very subdued and quiet, you need to be louder there. You need to differentiate yourself. And so those are the times when you need to look at your brand and reevaluate it. Should I refresh my brand? Should I extend my brand? Is my color palette letting me use the best practices that we all know exist going forward? So the idea of a living brand is just maybe definitely protect your brand, but be open to letting your brand shift a bit to accommodate success, conversions, and new technologies and platforms, if you will. So that's what I have, I believe, Stuart. Do you want to take back over?
Great job, Brett. Some of you may feel like you've been drinking out of a fire hose here. So I appreciate your attention. And we did actually show up just about on time. We've got a couple minutes left over for comments. Well, Brett, you can read through those real quickly and what's up there.
So I have a great question from JB. And it is, oftentimes a brand is recognized by its logo. When one company changes its logo, would they risk changing their DNA and part of their brand? Do you need to do it strategically? If yes, how? And if I could start that answer and maybe Stuart could finish it.
Sure.
Yes, a logo is very valuable. Depending on the brand equity you've built up, the brand value, it can be a dangerous thing to change your logo. A lot of times it's in these situations, a better approach, especially if you have a lot of brand equity, is to refresh your brand. So you can evolve your brand. Maybe you update your logo to be more current. Maybe you update your colors. But like the Synergenics work I was showing you, that logo never changed, even though their communications changed dramatically. So in those situations, we try to explore, can we refresh the brand? Can we change some of the brand attributes, the identity elements, to make it more current and make it feel more fresh? One that stands out, Stuart mentioned Tesla earlier. We all know Twitter turned into X. That was a giant loss of brand value, just massive. And Elon Musk is going to Elon Musk it, of course. But that's hard because now people are still calling it Twitter, but it's X. And in that situation, there might have been an opportunity to refresh the Twitter brand if you didn't want the bird, and rather than renaming the brand. So that's a dangerous one because the brand value is so high. If your brand hasn't found a foothold, if you're pretty new and you have a logo you brought, it's much easier to say, should we rebrand? But in that case, I think largely you're keeping a similar logo, a lineage mark, or you're just updating elements of that to let it work better in the real world.
I would add to that, I think Brett's exactly right. One of the key issues is how valuable is it? Because a lot of times, like on the provider side, for example, I've seen people overestimate their brand. I remember once I was working with a multi-location provider, cancer provider in Texas, and they just assumed everybody in town knew who they were. And my random sampling on the way to the client meeting, I asked 7 random people and nobody had ever heard of them. So that's not usually the kind of research we do, but you can do quantitative research to help get a sense of what you're about to give. And then when you do anything that's a major and you do have a brand reputation, this needs to be very thoughtful, very, very thoughtful. And then there's a net, it's just so big, the execution of the name and the logo, and then all the cost with all the facilities, and then the websites, and how do you do that? And it's just a big, big project. I'm not saying don't do it, just be very thoughtful. Next question.
Sure. I have one more question, if we can just jam the time a bit, that I think is a very good
it's
question.
Okay, we've got the A students are hanging out for a little longer. It's okay. We're not going to,
And I think this is a great question for you, Stuart. Our facility runs two clinics, a critical care hospital, nursing home, and a daycare. Should each sector have their own brand, or is it more effective to have them under one umbrella brand?
Okay, so it's kind of like asking a patient, doctor, I've got cancer, which chemo should I get? Meaning that we haven't done the homework, right? So I'll caveat this to say we haven't done the proper exam diagnosis and patient history to jump to the treatment plan. But if I had to say, so that's the kind of stuff we do in the brand process to go look at the pros and cons. They're usually oftentimes not one answer. So for example, I mentioned we had a COVID death in one of our clients' nursing homes. In that case, they had a house of brands. They literally had 50 locations, 50 different brands. So the good news there was that when somebody died, or there's a number of patients died there, it was focused on that single location. Nobody else knew it because it was one brand. So as opposed to the whole franchise. So that's where, and we've seen that, for example, one of the clients we worked with when they had four locations, now has 900 or something. Pacific Dental has that. They actually literally have 900 different dental office names. And that provides the advantage of being able to, one of the things it does is it feels very community. And two, it helps protect the brand. The master brand from whatever happens on the ground. On the flip side of that, that's very, very expensive to promote, and it's very, very confusing. So it takes a lot of scaling. So on the in your case, then I would say that a lot of times we would probably do a hybrid approach, kind of like we did with Astera. And by the way, Brett, we did name that. We did that project just before Brett joined us. So we did do the naming there. And that was after a comprehensive plan, but we did have, Astera Radiation Oncology, Astera Medical Oncology, Astera Transfusion, or whatever. And so that oftentimes is a good way of doing it. And it sounds like a great project. It's exactly the kind of stuff that requires the strategy and the creative execution to pull that one off successfully. And again, I just have to stress, it really requires some discussion. I could argue it both ways. And so at the end of the day, it comes down to the client and the situation.
Yeah, and I agree with all of that. Looking at those two clinics you mentioned, critical care versus home nursing home and daycare, those are very different worlds. So the communications become much more challenging when you're trying to address it with a unified brand, especially when you get into those brand systems. So that may be one of those times when a branded house, like Stuart said, a quieter corporate brand with more specific sub-brands becomes more useful.
That's where I would lean. That's generally where I would lean, by the way. The idea of having completely a house of brands where everything is divergent is a little harder, because there's also that nobody knows that you're part of the same system. Mm-hmm. And then these are very common in healthcare. These naming issues are huge. We get many multi-location businesses as clients, and they all, for example, we once worked with a gastroenterology practice, which sounded exactly like the other three gastroenterology practices in town. One's center, one's associates, one's clinic. It's all, so they have almost exactly the same name. So how do you differentiate? And what we find is in those kind of cases that the providers in town refer to people by doctor names because they don't know what the names are because they're so similar. Mm-hmm. So those are really key issues we see. And Tim has a client in Arizona, a pain practice that has a very name that people will actually try to steal from. So these issues are real. They need to be very thoughtfully and strategically addressed. Any other questions before we go?
I have another very good one from Daniel Benjamin. Thank you, Daniel. Can you speak to the analytical demographic process that feeds development of consumer personas?
So actually, I wish my friend Rob Klein is our brand expert that we work with. He's a brand. He's not just a researcher. He is a brand strategist, and we lean on him heavily for this. Typically, what he's doing is a lot of quantitative work, to inform the persona building. And so this is not really my specific area of expertise, but it can be done. The key is finding the right researcher that understands this world. And that's why I love Brand for these, or I love Rob for those kind of projects, because well, we work really well together. He handles the research part and we can handle the branding part.
Yeah, I think those are the questions I caught, along the way, unless I've missed any, but yeah,
great.
That's all I have, Stuart.
Great. Thanks, everybody.